Hello, everybody. You're listening to Under the Abbey Stand, Cambridge United's number one and only podcast. I'm former junior U Max Rushton, the third most famous fan after Mark Saggers and one half of Groove Armada. Ladies and gentlemen, introducing Jack Swindlehurst, Julian Roberts and Tom Walker.
Well, I'm Jack Swindlehurst. You're joined, of course, by me and the usual chumps, Tom and Julian. Welcome.
Pretty rude.
Yeah, I'm a rude guy. And of course, we are very happy to be in the presence of Max Rushton, as we said, esteemed guest, TalkSport presenter, Guardian's Football Weekly podcast host, and a diehard Cambridge United fan for a number of years, let's say.
Yeah.
How did your journey start?
Esteemed is it's not a word that's often put in front of my name. In fact, I would say ruder words are normally put after it, as you saw when you tweeted out for questions. Didn't you?
You get absolutely harangued on social media.
Yeah. I mean, I like to engage with the trolls. And it's...
Is it jealousy?
I don't think so. I think they just really hate me. And I there's a legacy of taking over shows where they liked the previous host. But there's a big difference between walking down the street and somebody shouting, "You'll never be Lovejoy, you mug," out of a man, which I actually took as a compliment, and somebody saying, "I much prefer James Richardson," because obviously Jimbo's a legend and I really like him. So, but actually, I got less abuse for Football Weekly than I thought I would, actually.
Yeah, a lot of people... Jimbo's like this, is a sacred figure, really, isn't he? More than anything. Yeah.
And there was a brilliant moment on TalkSport last week where I was covering for Paul Hawksby in the afternoon show, and Jimbo had been booked to go on to plug the live show of his new football podcast, and he didn't know that I was going to be hosting. And obviously there's a small Venn diagram of people who listen to Football Weekly and the Totally Football Show and Hawksby and Jacobs, but for them they were like sending you a lot of gifts of, you know, those two ones where Spider-Man is pointing at Spider-Man, or the docs who see each other in Back to the Future, or like the Twilight Zone. But me and Jimbo get on very well, so it was fun.
Well, let's start, with your Cambridge United journey. Probably started before ours, because of ages.
Yeah.
But, where did it all start for you in Cambridge United?
So my dad took me... My first game was... I think it was 1986, but it might be 1985. And it's quite hard to Google. I mean, I probably could have Googled it. But it was a 2-2 draw with Exeter. And we were 2-0 down. And Steve Spriggs, who was about... In my mind, was about 4'1". It was like a tiny... quite fat centre midfielder, scored two. And my main memories of it was I was only about seven, right? It was very cold. I got bored after about half an hour, which is pretty much similar for now watching the news. And I just heard a lot of swearing, and I didn't really grow up in a sweary house. You know, there was a sort of the odd bloody in my house, but there was nothing stronger than that. So that was quite an exciting moment. And no one smoked in my house as well, so the smell of cigarettes was a really quite... You know, I sort of miss that whenever I'm on the North Terrace. It doesn't now stink of stale old cigarettes.
You can't even smoke in view of the pitch anymore.
Say again?
You can't even smoke in view of the
pitch. I mean, it's probably a good thing for our health, right? I mean, I'm pro the smoking ban. It's a nostalgic memory for me. Yeah. But I'm not sure if plastic Cambridge fan is the term, but I don't see them very much anymore. Obviously, I used to be quite busy on a Saturday. I play every Saturday. I'm still trying to play men's football, even though I'm way too old, and I'm having a sort of existential crisis about that. So hopefully, if your questions are about 1988 to 2003, I could do an hour on Dean Barrick and Kofi Nyama and Armand Onne and Oli Mora. But if you start talking to me about if Joe Dunn's getting it right, I'll be cruelly exposed.
Luckily for you, we focus exactly on that period.
Oh, exactly. So. Then happy days. I'll sit back and enjoy it.
We got is Joe Dunn getting it right out of our system just a few minutes
Is he getting it right? I mean, I believe in continuity. I wouldn't say I was responsible for Sean Derry getting that job. But
this is something that comes up a lot later.
This is a huge part of today.
I'll tell the story. I'm really happy to tell the story. It's bizarre, Sean Derry came on Fantasy Football, right, which is the show I was doing with Murph.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was a really nice guy, right? And he had an interesting career. You know, he was... When Aguero scores that goal, Sean Derry is sliding past him. And really interesting story about how half the QPR team didn't know they were safe and half did. And just that thought of that on a professional football pitch, I think, is
did
brilliant.
He know?
I can't remember if he knew or he didn't, because some were like devastated when Aguero scored and some were like, yeah, doesn't matter. Anyway, he was on Fantasy Football. I think we must have recorded that on the Friday. Then I think on the Monday, Richard Money was sacked. And then on the Tuesday, Sean rang me up and said, what's Cambridge like as a club? And I said, you know, it seems all right, you know, like it's quite well run. it seemed, you know, there are fans involved. I think I'm a member of CFU. I think I get an email occasionally, but I don't really focus on it. I don't seem to have any much to do with that. But anyway, it seems like it's certainly better run than when we sold the ground and it was all a complete nightmare in the sort of Jimmy Quinn years, right? Mm. And I was like, okay, fine. And then the next day, Jez rang me and said, what's Sean Derry like? And I said, look, he seems like a really nice bloke. I've no idea he's a good football manager, because I didn't focus on a lot of what he did in Notts County. Now, I presume that more due diligence was done, you know, like, because...
Hopefully it wasn't just Max Rushton. He's a nice guy.
Hopefully it wasn't, but...
That's a pretty dangerous presumption to make with Cambridge United, I think.
Well, maybe. But, yeah. but I mean, I've obviously, since Soccer AM, sort of done quite a lot of stuff with the club, you know, if they need... Like I said, there's Mark Saggers, who's really grumpy, and one half of Groove Armada. That's like, I'm the only bloke that's going to host a thing for them, right? So I've spent a lot of, not a lot of time, but I've done a few things at the club. So I sort of knew everyone seems nice when you talk to them. So I sort of, it seemed like a nice fit. And I was sad that it didn't work for Sean Derry. I didn't see enough of us. There is a slight damning indictment if you've got the most clean sheets and you're 13th in the table, right? I went to Colchester away last year. I mean, that's a terrible stadium, isn't it? It's just the most depressing place to watch football.
Horrible bowl, yeah.
And I didn't feel inspired. But I've always liked Sean, so I was just sad it didn't work out for him. But I would stick with Joe Dunn, because getting rid of managers doesn't really make any difference. We'll be back where we started again. But you will all know better than I will. And you have to sit through that purgatory, and I currently don't.
Well, exactly. So if 85 or 86 was your first game, what was your first proper season?
I think I probably was a junior U first year. You got a little flat cap, like a knitted flat cap junior U. It was like quite a quality, you know, you got a good scarf, not like a little nylon one. And I think that must have been 87, 88. I remember I wasn't at the Littlewoods Cup game where we lost to Spurs and Keith Brannigan saved the penalty from Glenn Hoddle, because I would have remembered that. I can remember one of my first really sort of formative memories is we played Halifax and there was a bomb scare, and it was a Tuesday night game, right? So it was late, it was a school night, and everyone had to leave the stadium. Obviously, there's only about 10 people in the crowd, but we all had to leave the stadium, and then we came back to play the last 20 minutes, and Lee Philpott had a mishit cross deflected in. We won 1-0. I just remember being back so late. And that must have been around that time. And then I had this utterly ridiculous experience of winning the playoffs at Wembley, getting to the quarterfinal of the FA Cup, winning the third division, getting to the quarterfinal of the FA Cup, getting into the playoffs of the second division, and basically thinking being a football fan is incredibly easy.
You were kind of lucky in that period that you were initially started. Mm. We had this amazing period of success, really.
Yeah, you say lucky, but it's a bit like,
oh, you've tainted it, haven't you?
Well, it's like 10-year-olds now, right? Think England will get to the World Cup semi-final again, right? And we're all like, nah, this is a one-off, right? But 10-year-olds now are going, God, you know, supporting England is a great thing. It's not. It's a world of pain. Supporting Cambridge United is pain, right? That's what it is. It's any lower league side, it's masochism. I don't envy supporting a big club, because I think it's about expectation, right? And if you don't have any expectations, you can't be let down. So if you're a Liverpool fan, when they don't win the league this season, it's going to be, they're all going to get their hopes up, and then it's going to be depressing for them.
That's true.
We never have to have that depression.
But then I would argue that getting to the Champions League final is better than sitting 14th in League Two for three seasons in a row.
Well, I mean, you have a point there.
Someone actually asked you a question on this. At Dick Van Dyke 92 said, what's been more painful, supporting the U's, Spurs or England?
It's funny, because I did a phone-in on TalkSport the other day about supporting two teams, right? And obviously I got hammered for it, because there's this, oh, you can't support two teams. And you're right, okay. But my dad took me to the Abbey in 86. He put me in a Spurs kit when I was five.
Was your dad a big United fan, or was he more of a Spurs
so
fan?
So he grew up going to White Hart Lane in 50-51, okay, being like a young boy past. They used to pass the kids over people's heads, and they'd sit on the goal line. It's just an amazing idea, right, now when you think about the Premier League.
We should do that.
Yeah,
yeah, should. We should.
And you know, so he watched Jimmy every time Spurs play. After the final whistle, my phone rings and dad tells me Jimmy Greaves was good. Right, that's just like what happens. But obviously, when he moved to Cambridge in the late 70s, he started going. He stopped going for a bit in the early 80s because of the crowd trouble, because of how tough, you know. I remember we went, when we knocked Millwall out of the FA Cup in 89-90. I think it was that. I think that, I get muddled up which ones were, that was 89-90, was it? Because John Taylor scored in every round, and we drew at the Den, we came back here, and we won because David Thompson scored an own goal where he slotted it home from 30 yards. And so we went and signed David Thompson. That's what we did. We bought that player. But I remember my dad making me run home the whole way. We lived just off Mill Road. So you go, fair enough, run down Newmarket Road. Then we could probably stop jogging because there aren't any fans. But so he stopped going in the 80s because of that, and he started going again with me. So I think for that time, he was and is still now a fair weather fan in the literal terms. If the weather's nice, he goes. It's not who we're playing. If it's cold, he won't go. So he used to... I'd say now, because he doesn't go as much, he's about the same. For me, like, if Cambridge played Spurs, I'd want us to absolutely hammer them. But you can support both most of the time without it being a major issue.
Donaldson it is! Ryan Donaldson! The man who left Gateshead at the end of last season, doubles Cambridge's advantage.
That Gateshead game was, I mean, one of the most traumatic experiences of being a Cambridge fan.
The last 10 minutes.
The last 10 minutes, I mean, I lost my voice. And it was funny because I had a meeting on the Monday with the head of Sky Sports about my Soccer AM contract. And I was convinced I was going to get sacked for a number of reasons I'm not going to discuss. and it was literally all that was on my mind. But that game just took me away from that. And that last 10 minutes, and any, you know, I imagine most people listening would have been at that game, were torture, weren't they? They were
it was
absolute pain.
Also, that game has got one of these moments where, I think, I was listening to TalkSport, but I don't think you were on it. They were talking about free kicks that as soon as they're given, you know they're going in. Mm. As soon as they're standing over the ball, everyone's going to show that this is going in right now. And it was... And it did.
Especially being stood behind the goal.
You see it curl.
You knew where it was going, you knew where it was bending, you know it was going to go into the bottom corners.
And also, like, there's that chance that one of their centre-back has in, like, the 98th minute, and he's inches wide. And if he scores, they're going to win the game because we're down to 10.
Totally.
So, yeah.
But, I mean, I've never watched a free kick or a penalty as a Cambridge fan and thought that's going in.
That was the one time.
One of my favourite memories is we played Cardiff City. And you know they make those CFAX mugs.
Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The guys who made it sort of sent me a message saying, "Look, can we have a mug of your favourite Cambridge game?" And this is one of my favourite games. It's not my favourite. That's probably Arsenal away in the quarter final when we lost 2-1, because we scared them. They were the champions of England, and it was when Dion scored. We had these two Arsenal fans in the Cambridge end, and the look on their face of fear because we were outplaying them at the time. That's one of my favourite. Another one of my favourites is Forest away. In the Carling Cup, 3-0
down.
3-0 down.
Yeah.
And I remember I was at uni and we got the train up to Nottingham from uni, and I hadn't had time for dinner, so I just went straight into the stand. I can't remember, but I probably didn't have any money, so I couldn't afford to get a pie at half time. We're 3-0 down at half time. Think Trevor Benjamin scores, then Martin Butler, or the other way around, and then we have a penalty, and Shaggy's got this penalty, and it's the only time I was so hungry. I probably had a couple of pints. I couldn't watch it. It's the only time, one of those cliches where I just couldn't watch a penalty. And I remember, I mean, it's ironic that none of my favourite games are victories. It tells you a lot. But this Cardiff game, David Ellery was reffing, right? And I forget the timings, but Cardiff had three men sent off. They had two men sent off, so we're playing nine men. And then they deliberately handball on the line and we get a penalty, right? Yeah. And they're down to eight men. And then I think it was Martin Butler misses the penalty. I can't remember. and we draw 0-0, right?
Amazing.
And literally by the end, everyone in the North Terrace is just in hysterics. It's just like, this is so embarrassing, right? They've got eight people. It looks, you never see it on a pitch. 11v8 looks so ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it was just, it was so funny. And I think on YouTube you can find the Radio Cardiff commentary, and it is utterly hilarious because it's literally like they've won the Champions League when they get that point. I think that game for me sums up being a Hughes fan more than any of the victories, certainly.
So what's harder, Hughes or England then?
I don't know. I mean, I think, and I, if you're allowed to, you just don't think about England until major championships, right?
Yeah.
We qualify and then suddenly, so for this World Cup, I was doing a pod every day for The Guardian, and I do it, for those who don't know, with this very grumpy Irishman called Barry Glendening.
A lot of questions about Barry Glendening.
Okay, are they coming?
Yeah, they're coming.
So Baz and I spent an unhealthy amount of time together. Anyway, I've been married for 5 weeks and I think I've spent more time with him than my wife in the last five
Congratulations,
weeks.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thanks very much. Barry was so... Firstly, he said after that Columbia game, watching me watch a penalty shootout, England win a penalty shootout, was the worst experience of his life. And after the semi-final, he did what I would describe as the shittest river dance of all time. And it was so depressing. But no, I suppose the question is, would I take an England World Cup win for Cambridge not getting promoted for 5 years? And I probably would, because I'm not expecting Cambridge to get promoted.
Mm.
But actually...
Well, that Cambridge in the Premier League or in England?
Oh, man alive.
I don't know why.
No. I remember interviewing the chairman of Bournemouth, Jeff Mostyn, and I obviously remember us playing Bournemouth when Bournemouth were down in League Two, and having games against them. I can't remember what league, and thinking, obviously, a lot would need to change for us to be in the Premier League, right? We'd need a billionaire from somewhere, but it is a dream, and it is you have to cling on to that in some weird way, don't you? And that I would give anything. Sometimes, you know, when Norwich or you're watching Wolves or Hull and you squint a bit, it looks a bit like it could be us.
Yeah.
You know,
on match of the day. Yeah.
And what's a real shame is we had that chance, right? We had a chance in 91. It would have been 92. It would have been the first year of the Premier League, and we were top of that league at Christmas. Stevie Claridge scored the winner at Portman Road. And in that season, if I remember rightly, we were 1-0 up at St James's Park and Newcastle equalised in the 94th minute. Neil Heaney scored a goal at Ayrton Park, which was disallowed for no reason, and we would have won at Middlesbrough. And I'm not sure if those points would be enough to get us there, but we were that close.
Yeah.
And realistically, it's never going to happen, but it might. We just need a billionaire.
I wanted to ask you about the semi-finals from that year, the playoff semis against Leicester.
Yeah.
Were you at both of them?
No, I was at the home game.
1-1, right?
Danny O'Shea score, I think.
I
you weren't alive. Yeah. Cheers. Cheers.
Thanks very much. I can't remember.
I didn't go to the away one. I think I listened to it on Radio Cambridge and just got more and more depressed. I think that listening to that, and I wasn't at the game at Upton Park where we went down the next year. And the only ever thing Kevin Bartlett did for Cambridge United was be offside when Chris Lebiter scored, in the days where it didn't matter if you were interfering or not as much, and we would have gone one up, and I was pretty low when we got relegated from that, because that's sort of the first I'd had, just like promotion. I didn't really understand that you wouldn't just keep going up.
And then since then you really have understood.
Since there's been a lot of pain. I mean, the losing two playoff finals in a row was tough, especially losing to Torquay. Hells Bells is a proper football fan. So she didn't ram it down my throat. She realised that was really tough, you know. And, you know, that was but that's because such a hard league to get out of the conference.
Yeah.
Well, that year when we just missed out on the title as well.
Yeah.
And then you thought, right, it's fine, playoffs.
Which was the semi-final. I was at home game at the Stevenage game.
Game.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable, wasn't it? And actually it was a beautiful moment I remember invading the pitch. And we applauded the Stevenage fans, and they applauded us, and that was a weird thing, isn't it? Like, they don't really like us. We don't really like them. But it was a sort of really, isn't football? Aren't football people good? Which more or less isn't true. But but it was a really nice. That was a really nice moment.
Jay Reason back for Carden. Good save, Rendell. In the 119th minute, Scott Rendell gives Cambridge the aggregate lead. They're seconds away from Wembley, and Stevenage are seconds away from eliminating.
nation and another season in the Blue Square Premier. What a big moment in the history of Cambridge in the life of Scott Rendell.
So, yeah, the Monday night game, because I went with my dad and we haven't been to the game, a game together for years. So it's just amazingly nostalgic. And I sort of welled up when the final whistle went, because I was just like, wow, because you're so close to those footballers.
And so close to going 1-0 up.
So close. And, you know, I think Josh Coulson knew what he was doing, didn't he? He was like, let's get £1 million for the club. He's great. And the away game, was it Tom Elliott was clean through?
Yeah.
Like, it was too soon for all of us, because we're all sitting there going, God, this stadium's big, isn't it? Yeah. And then we're like, oh shit, he's clean. Ah. Oh. And you're like, if that had been 10 minutes in, I think we would have.
He also slips.
Yeah. Anyway,
yeah, I mean, like I say, he wasn't ready for it. No one's ready for it. He was walking up. Tom was walking up the stairs. I was on the phone to him as the game kicks off. I was like, yeah, I can see you. Just turn around, walk up. And then as I'm on the phone, my hand slowly comes down and I start pointing onto the pitch. Tom slowly turns around, just sees the ball hit the post before anyone knew it would actually happen.
Oh, God. I mean, because we obviously wouldn't have won anyway, but just to have scored at Old Trafford would have been unbelievable.
Insane. After 1 minute.
Yeah.
Especially to take the lead as well. That would have been super.
Were you up in the gods? Or?
Yeah. I was up. I can't really remember. I mean, it's just so big, isn't it? Yeah. You know? I mean, I've been to other big stadiums, but it's so weird seeing Cambridge at a big stadium. So I've seen Cambridge at Wembley quite a few times and it never feels real. Yeah. I thought the Gosport game was really weird because obviously we expected to win and I didn't enjoy it at all. The only good thing was I had Ian Miller's family behind me, who were really polite and nice. And was there was a right back, Scouse right back, was it Mark Roberts?
Kevin Roberts.
Kevin Roberts, right?
Yeah.
He's a good lad and his family are hilarious, all Scousers, right?
Yeah.
And he was on the bench. And there must have been about 20 of them on four seats. And who was playing right back? Can you remember?
Richard Tate.
Yeah. Oh, so Richard Tate's playing right back. And every time I got the ball, they were just like, get him off! He's Robbie's! Get him off! And then they were like, and every time Robert started warming up, they were like cheering. And I think the gaffer like pulled him up to bring him on and brought someone else on. And they were like absolutely devastated. But I didn't enjoy that game because you're like, oh, well, we better win. If we don't, it's embarrassing.
It was quite weird when it got to like 3-4-0, wasn't it? Because you thought, this should be tense.
Yeah. It's interesting to talk to Greg Taylor about that game because he was saying that within the squad, they thought it was just really useful playing at Wembley.
Yeah. No, that's fair enough.
The final, because he was like, oh, we did all the photos, we did all the...
Yeah.
Or the, you know, here we are at Wembley the first time round.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, no, the other thing about the Man United game that's interesting is it's not only we're playing in a huge stadium, we're playing in a full big stadium.
There's
fans everywhere.
Yeah,
whereas when you're at Wembley, there's, you know...
Yeah, no, that's a really good point.
So...
Yeah, but it was great to go with my dad because my dad is, you know, he's a cultured man. He, for the Crystal Palace semi-final, right, my dad would always bring a book because it gets boring, right? And he rang the club the day of the game. And he didn't have a ticket. He said, look, I've been going years and years and years. I haven't got a ticket. So they said, oh, we've got a ticket for you. And it turned out to be in the press box. So he was sitting next to Trevor Brooking. And the book he was reading, it's so Cambridge, right, isn't it? You know, we are like CB1. It's never going to be a hotbed of football. My dad brought Plato's Republic.
No way.
to the Abbey. So I have a signed copy of Plato's Republic by Trevor Brooking. Yeah,
that must be one of the most unique pieces of literature.
Yeah, I mean, probably worth more.
Is loads or
nothing?
Yeah. Or
I mean, is it? There aren't that many people who probably
read
Plato and love you need Trevor Brooking.
You need a recording of Trevor Brooking doing a dramatic reading of it.
Exactly
then,
right. Yeah.
Upper echelon.
Yeah, yeah. It'd probably be worth more if Plato had signed it. To be fair, but he wasn't around.
That's quite a niche collector. After that,
if you're listening, tweet us at Abbey Stan Pod. I'm sure
it's priceless.
That crossover person might be listening to this podcast. In regards to Cambridge United as a whole, who do you reckon? You know, this is a tough one. And I know this is going to make you scratch your head. Who's your favourite Cambridge United player?
It is a really hard question. My hero in the team of the early 90s was Michael Cheetham, who was an incredibly quick right winger. I don't really know what he went on to do or where he's gone or anything. And actually, one of the most surreal moments of my career was I was driving to Helen Chamberlain's house to film a piss take of the John Lewis adverts, so like to dress as a penguin or something for a whole day or something ridiculous. I can't remember. It might have been to do some advert. I'm not sure. And Dion Dublin rang me up and said, I didn't really know Dion, right? You know, I was like, why is Dion Dublin ring? That's just weird. And he said, look, I'm getting that team back together for a charity game. Do you want to come and play? And I'm just like, what? I mean, how is this is...
Sick.
Yeah, this is unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And going to that... And Cheats wasn't there, but like, I remember going to the dressing room and literally they're almost standing in formation because they're probably so used to being so organised by John Beck. It's like, you know, John Vaughan, Andy Fensham, Alan Kimball, Daish Chappell. I don't know if Daish was there. O'Shea was there. You know, Richard Wilkins. All these, and you're just like, Rushton. I'm like, what? I mean, there were some charity winners on the bench, and I was on the bench, so it didn't look totally ridiculous. Right. I remember running on and like tripping over about, and I'm an all right footballer. I'm not any good, but I'm all right. And just tripping over like the most uncoordinated person in the world because I was just like, I just think, I was just in a sort of world. I don't even know. We must have been playing like a youth team or something. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Cheetham was my favourite then. I've got so much love for John Taylor, for Steve Claridge.
Steve Claridge's socks.
There's a guy, you know, Ollie McBurney, who plays for Scotland.
Yeah,
Swansea, is he? I think he's on loan somewhere. Maybe he's back at Swansea.
He's at Barnsley now, yeah.
And that is like watching Steve Claridge. Steve Claridge would just run across the pitch sideways and sideways forever, but he just never stopped running. Yeah, Claridge was brilliant. I loved... My favourite goal ever, is that a question I ask?
It'll be in there somewhere. I'll tell you what, we've got top three.
Top three goals.
Top three United goals. We'll
take the best one first and then work backwards.
Okay, well I've got a weird favourite, which is against Port Vale on a Tuesday night and it was snowing and it was an orange ball and it was one of the worst games of football I've ever seen. But in the 94th minute, Gary Rowett powered one into the bottom corner. It wasn't a great goal, but the North Terrace just went because we were just so... It was just so cold and it was just so boring and it was an amazing moment. Phil Potts' volley against Bristol City. I was sitting with my friends Matthew and Clive. We must have been, 10? And one of them had a packet of polos and he said, look, every time Cambridge score, I'll give you a polo each. All right, we scored five polos. Right? It was unbelievable. But Phil Potts' volley was unbelievable. He didn't do a lot with his right foot and that was just amazing. And another goal, let me think, because I want to get it right. You know,
yeah, yeah. It's a big moment for you. This has all been leading up to this. Your entire career.
Okay, well, so in that season in 1990, we beat Derby at home. I think they were in the first division. They had Dean Saunders and Paul Goddard and people. And Chappell scored from the edge of the box, which was unbelievable. But Martin Robinson scored a great goal where he just cut back. And there's something about left-footed players. You know, I could pick a Dean Barrick pile driver. There must be hundreds of goals that I can't remember currently, but I'll go for those three. And if I remember another one, Dion's obviously against Arsenal. Trevor Benjamin's at Hillsborough. Do you remember where he just basically ran as fast as he could at Kevin Prince? Trevor scored most of his goals by just running at the goalkeeper with or without the ball and just hoping that it all went in. That was great.
Got there just before Taylor. Well, Taylor won that one though. Cheetham. Feels for handball. Still Cheetham. Cross for Dublin. He got a touch. Oh, it's in! Dion Dublin looped it over the top of David Seaman. And Cambridge have equalised. So, David Seaman won't keep a clean sheet in this match. What a great cross by Cheetham. And what an unorthodox finish by Dion Dublin. Maybe that's what confused Seaman. Well, where does it hit him? In fact, looking at it again, there may have even been a deflection off Tony Adams.
Similar question, but Conor O'Reilly's asked, what's your favourite and least favourite moments supporting the U's?
My favourite moment is when Dion scored against Arsenal, I think. Just for the look on those Arsenal fans' faces, and I was thinking, God, these are the champions of England.
Highbury as well.
At Highbury, it was full, and we scared them. John Taylor was put clean through, and O'Leary pulled him back, and the ref gave a yellow. And he should have been sent off, even in those days. And I think we could have beaten them. And my least favourite memory of supporting us is... Well, any time we lost to Peterborough. Fortunately, I haven't seen that many defeats against them. Any defeat at Luton is tough. Because it's so cold in Luton. The worst game I've ever seen is a LDV game against Cheltenham. And it was silver gold, I think. It might have been golden gold or silver. It was something like that. And basically, at the end, all the fans Cambridge and Cheltenham just wanted anyone to score. We didn't care who. It was just like, make this end. It is just so depressing.
What's silver goal?
Silver goal was if you scored in the first half of extra time, then at the end of the first half of extra time, that was full time.
Right.
Bizarre. Okay. Makes no sense. Silly idea.
It was a not very successful trial, you know, around the time of golden goal. But it never really worked. But
that is a mental rule.
I mean,
we should do it now just for Cambridge games, just in general. Just if you score in the first half,
Hang on. How many? We are normally losing at half time.
Well, exactly.
Just to point that out.
Yeah, but it just it brings in.
Okay, it shortens the game.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, you're right.
So what about this one then? This is a lot of more contentious than who the best player is.
Okay.
Max Shepherd-Osse, who's the worst player you've ever seen play for Cambridge.
I mean,
for United fans, I think this is actually genuinely quite a tough question to answer.
We've actually been asked this a few times, and position-specific questions.
Oh, right, you've done a whole 11, have you?
Well,
I think that is something that we should probably start doing, though.
Yeah, I mean, that could take us years, genuinely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Worst
player.
We've
struggled.
You never saw Devon White play, did you?
Right. We've heard the stories.
Okay.
It was one of the, the worst piece of transfer business.
Well, that's it, isn't it? Obviously, Devon White was probably better than a lot of players we had in the conference. But because we gave them John Taylor and we gave them £100,000, this poor bloke, right? I just couldn't. And then he went on to QPR and scored goals in the Premier League. Not many, but that it was utterly unbelievable. You know, I used to take so much pride in watching ex-Cambridge players get into the Premier League. You know, I think I picked, when the National Lottery started, I picked my numbers on squad numbers of ex-Cambridge players who were in the league. So, I'd have Alan Kimball because he was 3 and Phil Pott was 19 and that kind of what Danny Granville was. And, and Devon White, I just couldn't believe Devon White was there. So he may not have been the worst, but because of what he represented, i.e. losing John Taylor, you just couldn't believe, on a week-to-week basis, you couldn't believe it. But God, I mean, there were players who, I've seen players who have just gone, you can't play football. You can't.
You surely haven't won the competition way.
You can't do it. And I'll go White, but I mean, there could be so many.
Yeah.
There could be so many.
That sort of transfer business is something that seems to have plagued this football club.
Yeah.
Since it was started.
I remember doing the phone-in on Radio Cambridge when we sold Dave Kitson. Because he was so good and we didn't get... The thing is, right, you have this total blind... When I was young, I totally overrated all of our players, right? I was convinced Matt Joseph would play for England, right? And I remember thinking we should get $1 million for Carlo Corazin. And every time when they just went to... even Luke Berry, I thought Luke Berry would go to...
Well, I mean, I think that's not a ridiculous thing to say because, I mean, Kemal Roof had gone from Oxford to Leeds for...
£3 million.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
And it's always such a letdown, isn't it? When you're like,
I don't even know what
Barnsley?
It was. Barnsley? 400,000?
Something like that, yeah.
No, it's Luton as well.
Barnsley and then to Luton.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, you're talking about the first time we did it.
Yeah, we did it twice.
I know. So I remember the Kitson thing, and maybe that was the right thing, but I just remember thinking, that is not enough for Dave Kitson. He's such a good footballer.
Yeah. He's also the secret footballer, isn't he?
Well, I don't know. No, I think there must be more than one secret footballer because there... The secret footballer talks about international duty, and I don't know, you know, and Dave didn't get there. He's quite an interesting bloke, Dave Kitson, you know, runs a fashion business in Soho and, you know, doesn't really like football.
Yeah, he's a very interesting one. And like you say, I've done loads of research into it, and I feel like it can't be one man.
No.
Because I've looked at I've Wikipedia'd every single footballer
who ever
played, and it's not any of them. It's not any one of them. Yeah. I have a job. It just doesn't always require me to be doing much work, I feel. But yeah, literally, it can't be one man.
I've got a question I really want to ask you. What's your favourite United shirt ever? Because there's a right answer.
Good question. Oh, there is there?
Yeah, I think that's
right.
I think we agree.
I think there's two.
But I think it's going to be before your time.
Definitely before our time. Yeah. So, football shirts are nowhere near as good as they used to be.
No,
I think everyone knows that.
When I first started going, it was classic yellow, black down the sides with a red Linfox sponsor. And that was glorious.
That's a nice kit.
I had the Howlett kit, which bizarrely was furry on the inside. I hope the players didn't play that because it got really hot. the blue Fujitsu away is a great kit. But
it's the third kit.
It's white. Is that a white
one?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Oh, yeah, 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 it's a great kit.
It's divine. Someone's selling it on eBay at the moment.
I sold it, mate. Sold it. I don't get paid enough for that. it went for quite a lot of money.
Now, there's a bloke who lives in Cherry Hinton who's got one as well. And he never wear grey trackies. He always wears grey trackies and the white Fujitsu third kit. And it's a good look.
I'd wear that to work.
Do you know what a terrible one was recently, because I can't remember, I've got one. And it was that we were sponsored by this company that had like a pretend wax seal. So I had like it sort of really stuck out and had like a splodge around it.
I don't know what that was.
Did that show have quarters on it?
No, it wasn't a quarter one. I quite like the Beaumont stainless steel one in the sort of Dean Barrack years with a kind of, it was stripes, but some of them were a bit barcodey and some of them were dark black.
Yeah, I know the one.
I really like that kit. That was great.
Yeah, nice. What's your favourite, Tom?
I think it's got to be one of those three from when they had Fujitsu on the sponsor. I think I always remember kits by sponsors.
Yeah, totally. Mm.
I can never describe a football kit without using the sponsor.
I've no idea who's made any of them.
I also like the old school, like black and amber David Moyes. You know that sort of period when that photo of him walking off the pitch.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Really nice kit. Before my time.
Thank God, something is before my time.
Yeah, a friend of the pod, Jordan Warland, who contributes fairly regularly and is a diehard Hughes fan, although stands in the Habin because he claims that he can't see if he stands in the NRE because he's quite a short bloke.
Yeah, the Habin's interesting, isn't it? Sorry, he had a question. I'll go back to my thought on the Habin.
He owns the home Fujitsu one, and it's a very nice shirt, just the yellow one. Yeah, it's a very classic,
a good one.
Classic shirt. But
I remember if I did win the lottery and bought Cambridge United and we moved to a new stadium, you'd have to move that tree with it. You know the tree that sticks out the top of the Habin?
Oh, yeah.
I quite often, when the game is so bad, and once I'd stopped playing with my mates, guess what advertising hoarding I'm thinking of? You know,
that's a great idea.
It's a really good Arbery Fast Fit again, or Castle
Classic
Flooring. There was this, I used to look at the tree and just think, that tree looks, in a night, an evening game, the silhouette of the moon and the light just sort of coming off the tree is quite a beautiful sight.
Yeah, that's nice. But you'd get rid of the tree.
Well, if we moved stadium, I would put the tree and then I would uproot, take all the roots, and I'd put it on a plinth, however high it needed to be, so it would still be seen from the top of the from the main stand in the NRE.
Nice.
Or whatever becomes of those stands. The funny thing about Newmarket Road End is, like, when I was a junior, you know, I'd look at it and I'd be like, wow, this is the most amazing. This thing is so huge. And when you're in it, and when you're young, and you're like, oh my God, the noise this is making, and it's unbelievable. And then when you see it, I'm telling you, it's not even hard. It's like it goes halfway across the pitch.
Yeah, it's really small. So it's really shallow.
Tiny thing. I remember we got the reason we started going down was we spent some money on an electronic scoreboard. And brilliantly, we put it at a part of the pitch that the hardcore fans couldn't even see. You know, it was just there. You just couldn't see it. Like, why don't you put it above the away end? But that's sort of classic Cambridge.
Yeah, classic Cambridge thing, isn't it? There's one person that I'm very surprised hasn't been brought up into conversation, which is Lionel Perez.
Yeah, I mean, what a hero. I mean, he wasn't great for us. I mean, I don't know if that's controversial. He basically spent the whole time on the halfway line. He must have been lobbed about 1,000 times. Everyone remembers the Cantona lob, right? But we saw that every week for months. But he was such a legend, we didn't care.
The best thing about him is surely his last game, though, as well.
Unbelievable.
Penalty.
I remember being there, and I remember us absolutely screaming for it, and we were already relegated, weren't we?
Yeah.
And John Taylor just going, oh yes, sod it, go on then. Because Shaggy the manager then? I think Shaggy was the manager, and he went, oh, go on then. And we were like, yes, Lionel's going to score a penalty. This is great. He didn't score, he just ended someone's career, didn't he? Like that poor bloke. Yeah. He kicked it so hard, he broke someone's ankle.
That is like astounding power to get behind a football, isn't it? To be able to, he broke his leg, didn't it?
It was such an anticlimax. He was just ready to celebrate, and Lionel would have just jumped into the crowd, and it would have been just so perfect. But instead, he missed and had to go back, and then the guy was on the floor for like 10 minutes. And we're like, oh, God, it's going to go on forever, this game now. And, you know, you were like, wow, that is. I mean, there have been many anticlimaxes at the Abbey, but that was, it was just so funny. But yeah, the guy was a hero. I hate to think how much money we were paying him compared to the rest of the squad, but there was something glorious. There was something glorious about him. There's something, do you follow that 100 Years of Coconuts?
I don't know
if that is one of you.
Yeah.
I always love that. When I've got one mate, Hugo, that I was at school with, who lives in Exeter, and the only time we used to play football management games on the Amiga, like for days on end when we were young. And basically the only time we now communicate is when it's like Lee Palmer's birthday, or and that like a photo comes up on 100 years of coconuts, and it's Armand Arnaud's birthday. It's like no one else is going to remember. This resonates with nobody I know apart from my mate.
Yeah.
And I'll WhatsApp it to him, and then we'll just reminisce for like 20 minutes about Andrew Jeffrey side-footing it over the Habin again.
It's Fowler on Aboudjay's birthday today.
Is it?
Yeah, as we record. That is in that.
Well, many happy returns.
Yeah, of course, if he's listening.
If he's listening,
yeah.
Apparently,
he's a subscriber.
Apparently, Fowler on Aboudjay's only 34. That's mad. He played for us in like 2006.
Wow.
Do you know what? Like, I'm almost 40, right? And I've just been to where I went to school and sixth form to do a talk about. I probably no one paid any attention, and I had this devastating.
Hills Road.
I went to Hills Road, yeah, and this devastating realization on the train that the students I was talking to today weren't born when I left Hills Road. That is sad.
Oh God.
That is a sad time for me, isn't it? It's only going to get worse as well.
Yeah.